There we go. Before I get into the lesson this morning, I had a quick announcement I wanted to make. Donna and I have taken on the responsibility of Love Inc. coordinators for the congregation, and I have we're just kind of getting into this, so forgive us for not being a little more on the spot here. But this Thursday night, the 30th, from 7 to 8 p.m., Love Inc. is having a celebration night at the Crossroads Community Church where they have their regular meeting. And if you, Crossroads Community Church is in Nampa near Happy Valley and Amity Roundabout. And this is a good event to go to if you want to learn a little bit about Love Inc. and their ministry within the Treasure Valley. And so I would encourage all of you that can to go to that. It's a really great thing to celebrate with the people that are graduating from certain parts of the Love Inc. Program. So please take advantage of that. Also, okay, so not also. The lesson this morning is going to be kind of a follow-up to what I did when Donna and I got back from Uganda. And so I wore my Uganda colors this morning. Owen has on a black soccer uniform that we bought for him over there. The colors of the Ugandan flag are yellow, black, and what were they, red? I can't remember. Whatever. Well, I don't think it's on there. I don't remember. I looked it up, but I know yellow and black are in there. Yeah, and red. So you'll see various different soccer colors over there. Soccer's a big deal in Uganda. They don't even know what American football is. Football to Ugandans is soccer, which it is in most of that part of the country. One reason I had Gib read that weird passage, as he called it, I think that passage really talks about fellowship, and that's basically what I want to talk about this morning. I don't know how to categorize this lesson I'm doing it because it's all over the map, but I hope you'll get the main thing I want to get at is fellowship among Christians. So to begin with, I'd like to read Ephesians chapter 2, verses 11 through 22. And I'm going to be reading it. I think sometimes it's important for us to hear the word in a little different way than we are used to hearing it. And so I'm going to read Ephesians 2 here, and then we'll get into what else I've got to say. But don't take any of this for granted. It was only yesterday that you outsiders to God's ways had no idea of any of this, didn't know the first thing about the way God works, hadn't the faintest idea of Christ. You knew nothing of that rich history of God's covenants and promises in Israel, hadn't a clue about what God was doing in the world at large. Now, because of Christ, dying that death, shedding that blood, you who were once out of it altogether are in on everything. The Messiah has made things up between us so that we're now together on this, both non-Jewish outsiders and Jewish insiders. He tore down the wall we used to keep. He tore down the wall we used to keep each other at a distance. He repealed the law code that had become so clogged with fine print and footnotes that it hindered more than it helped. Then he started over. Instead of continuing with two groups of people separated by centuries of animosity and suspicion, he created a new kind of human being, a fresh start for everybody. Christ brought us together through his death on the cross. The cross got us to embrace, and that was the end of the hostility. Christ came and preached peace to you outsiders and peace to us insiders. He treated us as equals and so made us equals. Through him, we both share the same spirit and have equal access to the Father. That's plain enough, isn't it? You're no longer wandering exiles. This kingdom of faith is now your home country. You're no longer strangers or outsiders. You belong here, with as much right to the name Christian as anyone. God is building a home. He's using us all, irrespective of how we got here and what He is building. He used the apostles and prophets for the foundation. Now He's using you, fitting you brick by brick, stone by stone, with Christ Jesus as the cornerstone that holds all the parts together. We see it taking shape day after day, a holy temple built by God, all of us built into it, a temple in which God is quite at home. I'm going to do what I'm not supposed to do and make a disclaimer before I ever begin this. Some of the pictures are going to be not really professional, and the video is going to be really unprofessional. But I say that because I was the photographer, and I just wanted you to know that some of those aren't going to be... So if you got a really good eye for, well, an average eye for photography, some of it isn't going to be very good, but I hope it'll give you a flavor of what's going on. Some of these pictures are repeats from the last time. But anyway, we'll get into it here. So that's Aaron. And the last time I reported to you, Aaron was, we were anxiously looking forward to this last Tuesday and hoping that we would have a verdict on his adoption. That hasn't come about yet, but the kids, okay, and I need to make another disclaimer. It's hard for me, the Martins, I have a hard time not calling them the kids. The Martins met with the judge, and overall, I think they were optimistic by the time that was all over. It was a long, drawn-out day. Andrew sent us an email about it, and it was a long day. And they were mentally, spiritually, and physically exhausted by the time it was over. But hopefully, the judge is going to find in the favor of Amy and Andrew, and they'll get Aaron adopted soon. We're hopeful. Andrew mentioned in that email that he felt at times when he felt really exhausted and down, he just felt really strengthened by the prayers of everyone that's been remembering them. And so don't forget to pray. I wanted to throw this picture in because the lady on my left, yeah, she's on the left, her name is Laura. She is the lady who took Aaron in when he was found out in the bush. And I, the two little boys sitting between Evan and Aaron and the little girl that she's holding are kids that she's now taking care of. Laura is almost 70 years old, and she's kind of made this her mission to take care of orphan children in Uganda. And she's kind of the lady everybody calls whenever there's a kid that needs to be taken in. And she's the one that got Amy and Andrew on to Aaron. The next couple of slides, this is the Dubai airport. And this is not the Dubai airport. This is a small portion of the Dubai airport. This is the Entebbe airport, and that's all of it. And so I wanted you just to see the contrast between the richness that's found in Dubai and other countries as opposed to Uganda. This is the equator, where this is one of the things Uganda's really known for. When you go to Uganda, there's a couple of places you can cross over the equator, and it's just one of the things you do when you go there as a tourist. So when the Martins first moved to Uganda, they were in Fort Portal, a city about 3 hours north of Mbarara, where they're presently located. Their first couple of years in Uganda were very tumultuous, to say the least. The team was ruled by a missionary there, a senior missionary. He ruled it with an iron fist, and he'd invited the Martins to come work with him. But when Donna and I visited Uganda the first time in 2010, the Martins had just been kicked out of their church by this missionary. To this day, we are all still baffled by what is there. We're never given a reasonable explanation for why. We were in Fort Portal Church the whole time we were there. We were very worried about many things, not the least of which was the health of our children. After we returned to the States, the Martins received an invitation to work with the church in Imbarara, which proved to be nothing short of a miracle. One thing I will always take away from those dark days for Amy and Andrew was how they handled this situation with such maturity and grace, and how they grew spiritually from the experience. Now, I speak of these events in the Martins ministry not to disparage the former team members, although I'm having a hard time letting go of that and still probably harbor some resentment from that. I think the Martins have dealt with it better than I have. But I want to contrast that with what their situation is like now. As I mentioned in the last report, the Martins are now the only team left in Imbarara from the States associated with the Churches of Christ in Imbarara. Although that's the case, things seem to be going fairly well. The church there is very strong. They have a strong leadership team. Andrew serves as one of the elders along with two or three of the other local men. The preaching is very solid, if not outstanding. I was extremely impressed with Huntington Noe, the man who does the preaching. He is one of the locals, and his sermons would preach anywhere. Now, the difference between these two missions is very evident. In Fort Portal, that mission is very missionary-driven. Little input is given by the locals. And though the influence of the Martins is evident in Imbarara, the church there is very locally driven by very spiritual people. The church supports itself, and if the day comes when the Martins decide to leave, I believe the church will continue to remain strong. The one area that I think that Imbarara will benefit from financial help. Does this thing keep cutting out? Okay. Brian, turn on the other mic. I'm sorry about that. The one financial contribution I think that we could make to the Imbarara Church that would be really beneficial, and I want us to consider this some, maybe when we get a little more information about it, is the fact that, Andrew feels like the facilities that they meet in, the church building that they meet in now, is really not helping their growth. And so that's one area I think that would really be beneficial down the road for us to help with that. And they didn't ask for that. Andrew just mentioned that he thinks that would be a good idea. Another difference between the church in Fort Portal and the place the Martins are now, Amy and Andrew were really starved for fellowship. And when you all know, when you're going through a dark time, it's hard to go through it alone, and you need people to go through it with you. And I really applaud the sister churches of Uganda and some of their friends from another mission team that were there for really standing by the kids and encouraging them, because if they would not have got the encouragement they got, I think they'd have just folded their tent up and come home. It was dark, and it was not good. But the Imbarara Church, when they went there, welcomed them with open arms, and the mission team took them in and put them right to work in that effort. And the church people there were very good to them and welcomed them also. So what does Andrew do? Andrew serves as one of the elders, as I've said. While we were there, Andrew gave a couple of the meditations before the contribution. In fact, they have a meditation for their contribution, not just the Lord's Supper. And in fact, I don't remember him saying a whole lot about the Lord's Supper other than we participated in it, but they spent time on the contribution. He does very little of the preaching, but he has huge responsibilities with leadership, development, discipleship, and also the program I've talked about before where he works with the community on farming God's way, which is a way of trying to preserve the soil, moisture, and make their crops better. And that's got a revived concern, as some of you are contributing to the famine relief over there, and it's really picked up renewed interest since this famine. So they try to think of ways that they can take care of what they've got so that if they have a short rainfall, they still have a crop. Amy stays very busy preparing meals, taking care of the little ones, and homeschooling the older kids. And if you think Amy should be doing more outside of the home, I want you to think about, especially you ladies, most of the men here don't probably prepare meals because that's the American way. But think about preparing three meals a day from scratch. No prepackaged food, no cold cereal, no dishwasher, a small sink with very poor water pressure, feeding five kids and a husband, besides schooling the three oldest, washing clothes, and all of that stuff. That's not exactly my idea of having a lot of time to do a lot else. But Amy is a really gracious host on top of everything else. And if Amy didn't have her housekeeper, she would be hard-pressed to manage. So there's Amy and Andrew. There's the five kids. There's their favorite grandparents. There's their house. And all of you look at that and go, wow, they must be rich. Well, by a lot of standards, they are. And that's a nice house. I'm not going to disparage it. But houses over there are not furnished the same as they are here. And it's a little different than what you're used to. If you saw the kitchen, you women would go, you wouldn't want it. There is Karunji, who is, and that's Naomi helping Karunji in the kitchen. Karunji is Amy's housekeeper. She does the food prep and does the dishes. And there's a pile of dishes every meal, not just every day. And like I said, if Amy didn't have her, I don't know how she would manage. There's a gate into somebody's home, and you'll notice there's a wall around it. They have a lot of gated homes there because Ugandans, as a general rule, aren't very honest people, and they like to thieve and take advantage of people. So Amy and Andrew have a gate. They have a guy that lives on site, kind of a groundskeeper that manages the gate and lets people in and out and just lives right behind their house and takes care of stuff for them. There's one of the, I thought this was a neat picture. That's off of one of the parks we were at. But those enclosures, each of those is a community of or a family. And that's their little way of taking care of themselves. They keep their animals, their cattle. This part of Uganda right here is a place where they herd their cattle. And so they keep them in there at night, and then during the day they take them out for food and water and stuff. But it just gives you a little flavor of kind of the pastoral scenes that you've seen of stuff. This is the town. I showed these last time. It's very busy, dirty, smelly. It's a lot different from what we're used to. Well, maybe not so different from some of the cities, but... Let's see, that was taken at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I got on my phone, or I can't remember if I did this or if Haley sent it to me, but that was the temperature in Middleton, 2 degrees, and you'll notice Imbarara was 80 degrees. So in fairness, that was at 6 o'clock in the morning here. It was 3 o'clock in Imbarara, so. But I think that day in Middleton, it probably only got up to 10. But their weather is beautiful. High 50s or low 60s at night, and in the daytime it's 80 to 85. And I'd sit out and drink coffee every morning in my shirt sleeves and look at the temperature in Middleton and just laugh. So, okay, this is Donna and me with the kids at Rokobo Rock, which is kind of a retreat, and that's the dining hall where you were served your meals family style. It was really a neat experience. And then here's a picture of a giraffe at the game park. Those aren't in zoos. A leopard, that's out at the game park sitting on a termite mound. And I guess I just have to throw in that we're one of the two of the few people that have seen a leopard I talk to people that have lived there for 10 years and haven't seen one, so it's pretty neat. So, okay, now being in Uganda, or in Mbarara, and seeing firsthand the work that's being done in the church there has made me more aware of one thing that I believe we need to really improve on as a church. And that is our relationship between the Mbarara Church and our stateside congregations. I would not say that only about Mbarara, but I would say it about all of our mission efforts. How many of us have ever visited the Philippines? Okay, Don, you probably did it in war. Did you go to see one of the missionaries? Oh, okay, good. At least Don has done that. But I don't know, I don't remember a time we've supported the Luthers for 40 years. Is that right, Warren? Maybe longer, 50 years. Most of us have not approached the church about helping us or have taken personal interest enough that we've gone over and visited Alvin and that and Faye and that ministry over there. Jim and Nancy have been to Honduras. Has anybody else here been to Honduras to visit the missionaries? Now we had a vested interest in going to Uganda. I get that. We're going to see people that are really, really precious to Donna and myself. But after being over there, I think we as a church need to be purposeful about sending people. If we take it from the church coffers, we need to send some people over there to visit and be involved in that. Until we see these churches as fellow believers and citizens of the kingdom and not just a mission effort, we will not have the kind of fellowship we need to have with them. We need to get to the place in our relationship with them where it is not us and them, but us. And I'll use an example of, I serve on an ag board for an ag co-op. And we merged recently with another co-op. And it was from Eastern Idaho, which you're not supposed to, West and East Idaho in agriculture are not supposed to have anything to do with each other. It's kind of an unspoken rule. They just do things differently there. And so when we first merged with this co-op, it was tough getting as a board. They had their board, we had our board, and we were trying to meld the boards together to become one co-op because that's what we were. And when we first started, it was, well, their co-op, you know, those guys do it this way, we do it this way. Those guys, us. Now we're finally at the point where it's not them and us, it's us. East and West has been put together, and that's what I'm trying to get at here. In the family of God, there is no us and them. There are cultural differences between us that are very different, but we are bound by the blood of Jesus, and because of that bond, all of us have access to the Father. Okay, there's their church building. The church building itself, where they meet, are those windows up in the top, that's the building. Down below, when this was built, the idea was to have kind of a business center and put the church above it. I wonder if that wasn't so they could get rent from the building and pay for the church. I never asked them that question. But that's the building, or where they meet is up on top, and you walk up some steps in the back and go in the back door, which is right there. That's Donna and I. Those aren't all our grandkids. We had some kids photobombing that deal. And so I thought you might like to have a little flavor of what some of their worship, at least in singing, is. I did some of Noé's sermon, but it would probably be a little bit hard for you to understand him. But this song that they're going to be singing is called Hatara Yesu, and it means, if it wasn't for Jesus, I wouldn't have come. And so I'm going to play this one song for you, and if it wasn't for Jesus, I wouldn't have come. And I did one, and okay, before Brian starts this, most of their service is in English. You can get along fine over there in English. They do have an interpreter because there's a lot of local people that come that still don't understand English very well, but Noe speaks really good English. You can talk to almost anybody in the church there, and if you know English, you can do fine. But this song was one of their local songs, and so it's in their local language. And okay, Brian, hit the play button. I just wanted to give you a little flavor of what it's like. And when I hear that song, I'm humming it all day. Even though I don't know the words, I love the tune to it. And it's one that just, man, it's just one of those that sticks in your head. Oh, it says the oaks of, let's see, that won't help. Yeah, that's right. The oaks of righteousness for the planting of the splendor. Okay, thank you. I was going to remember that and I forgot. Anyway, that's it. Okay, this slide is a slide that it's at the back of their auditorium in a little glass case that has their contribution. And this is from October of 2015. I don't know why they haven't updated it more recently than this. But you'll notice down there at the bottom, it says their giving for the month was 1,157,500 shillings. Okay? So if you don't know what the value of a shilling is, in today's dollars, I don't know what the exchange rate was then when they posted that. But I looked it up yesterday, and in today's exchange rate, that's $371 for a month. Okay? So, you think about, I looked at our last month's give, or our last week's giving was $2,900 and change, if I remember right, looking in the bulletin. So think about, and I'm reminded of the widow's mite when I think about this. Those people are very, very, very giving. And they've been contributing to this famine relief just like we have. But for the month, they take in $371. They support their preacher, keep their building going, help with this famine relief and all this other stuff. Now, granted, their wants aren't anything like ours. If they've got a good pair of shoes, they're in good shape. But, you know, it just kind of shows you the contrast the way we live and the way people in third world countries often live. So anyway, okay, there's the Martin family again. That was the morning before we went to church. The first that was Christmas morning, if I remember right. And then I just took a picture of a sunset, which I thought was pretty. It was probably prettier in person than that picture. Okay, so I chose this passage from Ephesians because I believe it says what I'm trying to convey to you or to us as a congregation. I know that this passage is talking about Jew and Gentile. I get that. I get the context of it. But I do not think it is out of context to make it about any two groups who might be divided by any kind of practice, prejudice, or belief. I think at times we who are the circumcised forget that we were at one time also without a Messiah, people without hope. We forget that Jesus brings those who are far off, the Ugandans, near to himself and proclaims peace to them as well. As we worshiped and visited together with the Ugandan people, I found the Ugandan brothers and sisters to be concerned about the same things I'm concerned about, to care about those things I care about, to serve the same God I serve, to love others the way I am called to love others. I began to see us not as Ugandan and American, black and white, rich and poor, but as fellow citizens of the kingdom of God. I found that we are one through Jesus the Messiah. I would encourage any and all of us to make that trip to Mbarar or any other of our missions and see personally what is taking place in the kingdom of God. It will be life transforming. Chuck.